Good morning, everyone. Welcome to Content Management System Roundup. I just want to, before we get started, just point out that I'm on Dayquil right now. So if anything I say doesn't make any sense, that's probably why. So first question is, what's a roundup? And here in Texas, it's probably what most people think of when they think of a roundup, getting all the livestock together in one place. And so, we kind of thought about, well, let's see what happens when we get all the content management systems together in one place. But that proved to be a little bit cumbersome just because there's so many of them. So we had to be a little bit selective. So here's a list of some of the content management systems that we're not going to be covering today. So you got all that? Because there's a couple more. So let's go back to the question then. What is a roundup, right? And so for the purposes of our discussion today, we're going to define a roundup similar to the way they do on broadcast journalism, basically a summary of some of the most important items of the day. So to that end, we've gathered a panel of people who come from a variety of backgrounds. We're going to cover a variety of different CMS products. And what I think is really great about this panel is that none of these folks have actually ever worked on any projects together, and most of us had actually never met in person before this week. And so I think we've got a really interesting and diverse group of folks. So without any further ado, here's the introductions. We've got Matthew McDermott, who is a principal consultant and practice director for Catapult Systems here in Austin. He's a specialist in Microsoft technologies focused on web content management. He's led SharePoint implementations for Fortune 500 companies since 2002 and is a Microsoft Office SharePoint Server Most Valuable Professional, which is essentially a title bestowed by Microsoft on the best and the brightest in the technical community. And he's a popular presenter at SharePoint conferences. And in his free time, he's a canine handler for Canine Search Austin, which is a volunteer canine search team serving the FBI, the Austin and San Antonio Police Departments. Our next panelist is Jeff Eaton. Jeff is a member of Lullabot, which is a Drupal consulting and training group. And Jeff has actually worked with a variety of content management systems and website frameworks, everything from .NET Nuke, Joomla, Scoop, a dizzying array of homegrown web apps, a variety of languages. And 3 years ago, he drank the Drupal Kool-Aid and is now an active developer for the Drupal open source web framework. Jeff is an avid photographer who's also an expert on Christian Kitsch in his dark, mysterious past. A 7-year zine publishing stint led to a co-hosting gig on the 700 Club. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Then we have Mike Essel. Mike Essel is a designer who's taught at Parsons, RISD, SVA, and is now an assistant professor at the Cooper Union. He was a partner at the award-winning design firm, The Chopping Block Incorporated, which he co-founded in 1996 with a fellow graduate of the Cooper Union. During his 6 years with the firm, his clients include National Geographic, MTV, and the band They Might Be Giants. He's since gone out on his own and done work for Chronicle Books, DC Comics, Rizzoli, and The Smoking Gun. His work's been recognized in numerous publications by the AIGA Art Directors Club. In 2003, his work with The Chopping Block was featured in the National Design Triennial. He's currently the vice president of the New York chapter of the AIGA, which is the Professional Association for Design. And he's the owner of one of the largest collection of Mr. T memorabilia in the world, and was a 1991 Nintendo World Champion semifinalist. Nice. Our next panelist is Tiffany Ferris. Tiffany is the president and chief strategist at Palantir.net, which is a Chicago-based firm. Founded in 1996, it's developed a full range of custom interactive websites, database applications, and software. Working in conjunction with a variety of creative partners, she's managed development of visually and functionally sophisticated sites for a variety of high-profile corporate, educational, institutional clients, and also serves as the electronic media chair of AIGA Chicago. In college, she was an astrophysics student and a Latin scholar. In fact, when I first met her, we're actually married. She had already had her own pulsar, was what, GX1+4. Right.
Nice. Go Gamma Rays.
Yep. And then there's myself, basically your moderator today. I'm George Demet, the founder and CEO of Palantir.net, and I've been building websites since 1994. I'm a bit of a film geek and science fiction nerd, and was those loves that led me to create the very first 2001 A Space Odyssey fan website, which appropriately enough has not actually been updated since the year 2001. And yeah, I'm probably the only person here at South by Southwest who has experience driving a garbage truck. So maybe not the only one.
So have a meetup.
The way this is going to work is that we're basically going to have each one of our panelists do a brief presentation on a different content management system, and then we're going to just open it up for questions. So, Matt, you're first.
Thank you, George. So the challenge is SharePoint in 10 minutes, and SharePoint is actually a suite of products that starts with the quote-unquote free module called Windows SharePoint Services, and it's really a business application. It's a collaborative tool. You don't get the content management portion of it until you bolt on the MOS 2007 or Microsoft Office SharePoint Server 2007 standard, which gets you the web content management features that I'll be talking about in the next few minutes. The enterprise side of it provides you with additional functionality that gives you line of business application connectivity, form services so that you can write forms for your applications without having to be a programmer, and a number of other items that help to help organizations and businesses bring their business model to the web and to their intranets. The folks that are using SharePoint are geeks like me that use it for their blog. Rogue schools that really have no business being on the internet whatsoever. Corporations that do a little bit of dabbling in Web 2.0 and new media, like the Ministry of Sound. Some small companies that have a presence here and there on the web that that wanted to be able to bring content authoring to their business users, as well as large organizations that want to do not only have a presence on the internet, but also use that same platform as an intranet and collaborative sharing application for their distributed teams. This way, the IT departments have one application to support across the entire organization. There's also a few rogue nations out there that are using it for publicity. Australia has adopted this in a big way, as well as a number of other companies, or I should say countries, that are using the application in multilingual and its multilingual capabilities. From a design perspective, it's essentially the same as everything else you're going to hear today. You're going to take a website. You're going to decide what elements you want to have in common across all of your website. That becomes a master page. The elements that are not in common, the elements that you want your content authors to interact with, become page layouts. You use a tool from Microsoft. Appropriately, they have the entire stack, called SharePoint Designer. In SharePoint Designer, you have a code view, you have a WYSIWYG preview if you want to use that, and essentially you will author your pages using HTML markup. You can also extend the capabilities of SharePoint using any of the .NET languages, but this was representative of what a master page would look like in the design view. So really all you're working on is that top and bottom level. If you have an L shape, like you want to do a left nav, it's totally possible. When you're working in your page layouts, the layout design renders the master page so that you can see how your page layout is going to look in the final rendered version. Of course, in this view, the master page sections are not editable, but all of this is performed by what we consider the skill set of a designer, not a developer. So in our world, the designers are the ones that are using SharePoint Designer. They're writing HTML, and they're rendering these pages. The developers step in when we need to enhance or extend the functionality of SharePoint, again, using the .NET languages. The authoring view is going to be similar across the board. But what you have is DHTML menus and pickers for you to be able to pick approved photo assets, be able to perform spell checking inside the UI. And the benefit here, of course, is that you can drive content authoring down to your business users, down to the people that actually should be writing the content. And then you can push it through workflow from there. And all of this is out of the box. The design time that you're seeing here, of course, is rendered in Internet Explorer, but it also works in Firefox. And then out of the box, some of the other features you get a browser-based workflow process so that you can do parallel and serial approval of your content. You can list out the approvers that you want. Everybody's getting email alerts so that they know when there's new content available for them to be approved. There's also built into SharePoint Designer a conditional approach to your doing branching logic for your workflow so that if you do have a need to do slightly more complex workflows or have condition-based workflows, then you can use the designer built into SharePoint Designer to do that. SharePoint also comes with search out of the box. You have you can search for pages, you can search for documents and people. You have keyword highlighting and best bets. So you can feed in the keywords to the system so that if somebody searches for an object that you're or a keyword that you're looking for, you can publish new information to them. It has did you mean spelling correction. So if you if somebody types in a word incorrectly, it will automatically detect that. It'll give you did you mean with a click, and they can pivot their results on that. You also have thesaurus and relevance ranking. So if you want to tune that engine, that search engine, to be just the way you want, you have that capability. And the entire search experience is fully XSL, XML and XSL compliant so that you can custom tailor those results. This is the out-of-the-box search box at my intranet when I search for my dog. It has a high-confidence hit with her picture in it. It also has the keywords and best bets off to the right, as well as the search results down the middle. SharePoint does support variations as well. Most of the time, variations are used for multilingual purposes. So in this case, if I have an English site with an English branch, I can spin up a Japanese site, and SharePoint will automatically copy the pages down to the Japanese site and prep those pages for translation. It does not do translation automatically. I still get that question quite a bit. So once the translation is complete, the pages can be published, approved, and pushed out through workflow. If a new page is published in the English site, once that page is approved, it gets copied down to the Japanese site where it's ready for approval and publishing. So it manages related content, it does the propagation for you, and it maintains a link between source and target pages. A number of our clients started out using this for multilingual capabilities, but you can use it for any kind of replatforming. So if you want to have a mobile version of your site, then you can render a mobile variation and have all of your content published down to the mobile site, apply a different master page or a different CSS to render it differently for the mobile platforms. And then finally, I'd be remiss if I didn't tell you about what it can do on the intranet. Once you've authenticated your users, and I'm using the intranet here, but even if you use authentication on your internet site, you get all the capabilities of people and personalization, document management, collaboration, you get line of business integration, of course, search, and something we call My Sites. This is a My Site for an intranet user, but it could also be the profile for a person on your internet if you wanted to maintain profiles for them. You can have colleague tracking and in common with capabilities for social networking. You can also have memberships in common or sites in common, so that if you had a site set up where you had multiple communities of interest, then this out-of-the-box capability would allow you to track those multiple capabilities. And then finally, you have a colleague tracker, which allows you to keep track of the people that help you, the people that don't help you, et cetera. There's something in SharePoint for everyone. So if you are tired of the GUI and you really want to get back to the command line world, you can do that too. You can type in cryptic commands to the command line. It's fully documented because all you have to do is type help at the end, and it will throw all kinds of code up at you, and it will give you examples of how to use the command line. So in summary, SharePoint is a rich content management platform. It includes search capabilities. It has navigation controls and breadcrumbs. It has options for multiple authentication. So if you want to do forms-based authentication or you have some other authentication provider that you've created for your personalization for your site, you can tie it into SharePoint. It's multilingual capability, workflow, and then offers social networking capability like My Sites, blogs, and wikis.
Awesome. Now we're going to turn it over to Jeff Eaton, who's going to talk about Drupal.
So quick, any show of hands, who here has actually heard of Drupal?
Yes.
So Drupal is an awesome social site building framework with a vaguely creepy looking logo and a weird name that it involves Belgians. Don't ask. It's Drupal. In a nutshell, Drupal is a web framework that's completely open source. It's built by the people who use it and use it to build sites, which has upsides and downsides, but we found that it has a whole lot of upsides. The people who are building Drupal are hobbyists, individuals who had a website and had an itch to scratch that they decided they wanted to go for it. Two of the most valuable contributors to the Drupal project are a 12-year-old kid named Dimitri, who does amazing and scary things with JavaScript, and a 50-something grandmother who decided she wanted to build to maintain a website about caring for elderly parents and ended up becoming one of the most valuable code contributors to the project. There's also businesses like Sony BMG, Lifetime, Fast Company Magazine, who, because they're building their sites with Drupal, they've actually built up internal Drupal teams, and as they solve their own problems, they're contributing the code back to the project and doing cool stuff with that. Also, volunteers who are just hardcore geeks and like doing stuff like that, and Belgians. We got a lot of them. There's a really staggeringly large number of sites of different kinds that have been built with Drupal, so listing the kind of stuff that it can do is a bit difficult. There are blogs, magazine sites like fastcompany.com just relaunched. It was actually an interesting project because they wanted to take all of the magazine content they had. They wanted to roll in an existing 100,000 person social network they had called Company of Friends that's been around for about 10 years. And then they wanted to add citizen journalism capabilities so that people could then go in and be writing articles and updating content on the website so that, in addition to all of the staff writers, in theory, a really insightful post you had about, you know, Apple's latest business decisions or something like that could end up being featured on the front page, could end up being featured on the front page of Fast Company magazine along with, say, something by Scobel. There's lots of community-based websites. This is one called Terminus 1525. I always think 2515, but it's Terminus 1525. It's been around for a long, long time, and it's just an artist community site in Canada. Lifetime Television recently relaunched with Drupal. There's a lot of artist sites that are starting to come online with it. This one's an interesting example because it's completely Flash on the front end, and Drupal is just being used for the back end. And we'll talk about it a little bit later, but there's a theming layer on top of all the geeky goodness that lets you basically output in any kind of format that you would like. So this one's crazy Flash-driven with all the shiny, whizzy stuff, but under the hood, it's Drupal. MTV UK's website with a bunch of crazy animated social networking stuff, also Drupal. The UN is running its End Poverty site, Inc. Magazine's business networking site, Us Magazine and all their insane things, also Drupal. DC Comics and IBM recently built a website that's essentially for people who are trying to break into the comic industry and have a great idea and want to come to the table, but don't really have ins in the existing network of comic publishing, can come to this site, submit essentially a full pitch comic, and then the visitors to the site will like vote on it. The stuff that bubbles up to the top every several months, they basically take those cream of the crop entries, and DC editors will then go through and work with them to polish it up and actually come up with a pitchable product that DC can then actually buy and produce on an ongoing basis. It's definitely an interesting site. The Onion, one of America's top news agencies. I gotta say, by the way, now that CNN and The Onion are cross-sharing their headlines, my world has gotten a lot more disorienting. But yeah, they've actually been running on Drupal for quite a few years, and they did some really cool stuff with it. I just found out that actually the guy who designed their Drupal site ended up getting hired by The Times because he'd done such an awesome job on that. Sites like Pop Sugar, it's a social networking site for teen girls. One of the Drupal contributors built an odd and goofy looking little site for some stuff that his school was doing. But one of the ideas that comes through here is Drupal can look like whatever insane Photoshop files your designers throw at you, which is one of the really nice advantages. Sony BMG has a music box site that they use for all their promotional video sharing, stuff like that. It's a lot of fun. There's a lot of stuff that we see being done with it. And it's got a really, really large ecosystem of people who are contributing tools to it. There's about 3,000 or so plugin modules that add capabilities like being able to log in with your Facebook credentials or being able to cross-post to Twitter every time somebody posts a photo on your site and just funny bits like that. Under the hood, I'm not sure if it's large enough to see some of those bits, but little colored blocks work. Drupal has a couple of different layers. Way at the bottom, there's the Drupal core code. It's just a PHP project that you can download and throw onto a web server and run. It handles stuff like user login, search, authentication, security, all of those basic capabilities. You can put together a relatively nice community, you know, shared blog, you know, site like that just with that. But there's also that huge ecosystem of third-party modules that add additional capabilities like photo uploading, auto cropping and resizing. I would list them, but it's 3,000 long. It takes a while. On top of that, you can have any kind of users. You can set up different roles like editors, administrators, peons who can only log in and, you know, read stuff. But one of the basic ideas is that Drupal revolves around the idea that lots of people are going to be contributing stuff to your site. You could build just, you know, a straight up, you know, brochureware site with it, but it'd be leaving a lot of its capabilities by the side. There's also that content layer on top of that, that Drupal has lots of different kinds of content. Instead of just having pages that you drop in, you can have things like blog posts, news, wiki pages, photos, and all of those things, instead of being page-oriented, just go into a big soup of content. And then the layer on top of that is views of that content. You can say, I want to build a blog. Well, a blog is really just a reverse chronological list of any content that's a blog post. And you can filter that by user, stuff like that. Building a Drupal site is basically the process of identifying, okay, what kind of people are going to be using it? Let's figure out what roles they need, what permissions they have on the site. What kind of content are they going to be working with? You know, I want to have file uploading and sharing. I want people to be able to post huge images and then blast them out to a BitTorrent or stuff like that. Then on top of that, you just figure what kind of different ways of presenting this information, all this content, do I want to have to people? I want to have blogs. I want to have a calendar of stuff that's going on. All these different ways of presenting that pool of information go together to make your site. And then on top of that, there's this theme layer that I mentioned earlier regarding that artist site that was all output in Flash. It generates all the XML, HTML, CSS, all the stuff that actually people see. Mobile sites was something that was mentioned earlier. That's one of the really common uses of this theme layer. You can have a completely different mobile theme that generates a different look, different set of pages. You can have another one that generates all the awesome stuff when people log on with the regular browser. And that stack of stuff is what most Drupal sites are made of. If you actually log on to a fresh Drupal site, it kind of looks crappy because the theme that it ships with basically looks like a blog. So it's okay. But then using different tools like setting up user roles and accounts, creating your own custom content types, and going in there and turning on additional modules. Basically, you start layering these capabilities on, customizing what kind of stuff is there and what the user roles are and what things they can do. And it all comes together pretty nicely. Drupal sucks badly if what you want to do is make a web page. Like, I'd like to have a page, and then another page that I link to, and we'll put together the HTML and stick a Flash file in there. It's like swatting a fly with a Buick. There's no reason to use Drupal for something like that. If you want to build the next Twitter, also, bad move. There's no real good reason to use an existing content management framework for something that's that focused. Static sites, brochureware kind of stuff, again, no real good reason to work with it. I know people who have built it, but that's mostly because they're already very familiar with Drupal and like using its tools. And if you're building just another blog or something like that, use WordPress, use Typepad. It makes sense. But where it really rocks is if you need lots of user-generated content, you're building communities where everybody's going to be interacting and needs to have an actual role on the website rather than just coming in and commenting on stuff that the real users of the website post. When you need lots of different kinds of content that get treated in different ways, like photos that automatically get cross-posted on Flickr or blog posts that automatically get cross-posted on LiveJournal and then get pinged on Technorati, stuff like that. When you want to have many views of the same pool of content, like calendars, RSS feeds, mailings that automatically go out, Drupal's tools let you build all of those different kinds of views on things really, really nicely. Also, if you really, really care about open APIs and web standards, Drupal is a lot of fun. There's a really, really strong community of people who build add-on modules to integrate it with other APIs as soon as they come out. So things like taking a little block of content on the side of your site and saying, I'd like that to be a Facebook widget. That's cool. You can do that. I want people to be able to log in using OpenID. That's actually a part of Drupal core now with the latest version. There's a really strong emphasis among the developer community of building in those kinds of things. And the design community around Drupal, which isn't as large as we'd like it to be because most of the good designers get snapped up by companies wanting to build custom sites, they're really, really conscious of things like web standards and, you know, accessibility. So there's a strong emphasis on that in the community. How much time have I got? I got a little bit. Okay. I'll flip right through this. This is Chris Daughtry's website. You may remember him as, I believe, the second or third place guy on American Idol. Basically, Sony BMG had tons and tons and tons and tons of websites for all of their artists that they'd been spinning out year after year, all static. Maybe some of them had a message board. Maybe some of them were nothing but a giant Flash file. But the problem is they also went away as soon as a new release came out. They tossed it, made a new one. They had no continuity between their artist websites, and it was a real pain actually spinning any of them up because they had to go out and hire somebody to build one from scratch. In addition to that, they found that all of the actual traffic on the internet was going off to web boards that fans were setting up because that's where actual community was happening around these artists. So what they wanted was a platform that they could use to spin off new sites for each one of their artists where they could have the social content, where they could have the artists actually interacting with their fans where that they hadn't really been able to do that before. So I'll skip through a bit of this, but they wanted things like photo sharing, the ability for people to go in and rate and review tracks and download samples. And we actually ended up building that for them. And now that it's there, now that it's there as a platform, using Drupal's ability to drive multiple sites off of the same Drupal code base, they can now spin off sites like Avril Lavigne with the Are You Emo quiz and Ozzy Osbourne's site and Britney's website, fun stuff like that. For them, it had a lot of upsides. They got a massive traffic boost because instead of showing a static file or just a Flash presentation, they were actually setting up a community where everybody could come in, connect, talk about what concerts they were going to and who they could meet up. They could roll out new artists fast. They wanted to get to the point where they could roll out two or three new artist websites every week, and their only real overhead was hiring designers to create the custom theme for it. They're supporting open source. Sony BMG is actually one of the largest contributors to that open source project now because they're actually building solutions for their own sites and contributing them back now. Also, they pioneered playing It's Britney Bitch as a WAV file on every page load. That stopped eventually, but it was fun during testing. So yeah, there's a lot of stuff you can do with Drupal, big, small, in between. And we like it. Also, we're going to be throwing out t-shirts to anybody who asks questions.
Alrighty, so Mike, you're up next. We'll be talking about Expression Engine, among other things.
Okay. Hi, I'm Mike Essel. I've been using Expression Engine for 4 years. Actually, the site I'm about to show is, we think, the first ever Expression Engine site ever made. So pat myself on the back for that. Who here has used Expression Engine? All, oh wow, more than I thought. Okay, and who here's a designer, like a just an individual person making websites? That's pretty good. Okay. I'm going to go about this a little different and just show what I've been able to do with very limited technical knowledge with Expression Engine. Let me repeat that. I have very limited technical knowledge. Okay. So that's me, Mr. T. That happens to be the only time in my life I did not have a beard, and my double chin is captured forever in that photo. So, okay, that's the front page of the Mr. T site. We changed, well, we used to change the front page all the time. This, again, this was in 2004. This is what Mr. T and me looks like. And the thing to keep in mind with this is that there is no custom PHP on any of this. You guys got that? None. Like, when we were talking about Drupal the other night, asking how to do things, he was like, oh, you learned PHP. And this isn't a war. I'm just saying there's no custom PHP on this site at all. So what you see is basically what you can do with Expression Engine right out of the box. So you can upload those images. They can resize. You can have the post ordered. You can have recent items, news, categories, blah, blah. Everything I've ever wanted to do with a website, I've been able to do with Expression Engine. Right? So individual entry pages. This happens to be the world's worst fantasy Pez ever made. These are another item page. So if you look, that little thumbnail of icons down the road on the side, that is all built in Expression Engine. So I just used their photo upload module and just click, 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 and it just worked. Okay. That is, you click and get a bigger preview. I'm showing this because there's a crayon called Buckle Down Brown that you can see here. There's built-in comments, custom error pages like this. Custom archive pages. You can do archives by category and archives by title. The other thing worth mentioning is that it all is XHTML, CSS compliant. Everything I'm showing you is. And even in 2004, right out of the gate, it was like that. So I basically built this site three times. That's how much of a nerd I am. The first time I built it on tables. Everybody remember that? Then I built it in CSS with P Machine, which I'm going to show in a minute. And then I built it again using Expression Engine. And I'll get into the reasons why in a minute. So features. All right, now here's why. It used to be with these content management systems like MT, old P Machine. I even hear that some people do this in WordPress. But how many people have done something like this where they shoehorn a bunch of content into one field and then they try to, oh, I lied. This is custom PHP. one part. This is back in the old days, though. So it used to be that if you wanted to have individual fields, you would have to bump in all this content into one field. Am I really the only person that's ever done this? No. Okay, good. Okay. So I had to learn that much. This is before Expression Engine, right? So this is the old way. So I would put in these double pipes. I would use PHP to find the double pipes. I would explode all that content out into an array, and then I'd have to re-piece it together back into the system. This is a pain in the ass, okay? Now, most content management systems, you don't need to do this anymore, but back then you did. So if you look at this with Expression Engine, you can do things like have a custom field for every single little bit of content, which I think in Drupal land is a node, right? Similar? No? Okay. Okay. So I just went in and for every little thing on the site was like, this is this, this is this, this is this. And that's really easy to do in EE. So here's creating a custom, just a simple field. Here's creating, I can barely see my slides. This is creating a drop-down menu. It's really simple. You can see you just put the list in the bottom field. This is how you edit those. So when you create these custom fields, they just all sort of list. So when I go to edit or publish, I just get a list of every field I've made. You can change the order of those. And in the new EE, who went to the EE preview? Anybody? Yeah, in the new EE, you can move those fields around. You can customize them per view. You can change what your client sees versus what you see. It's all, even this layer is now customizable. All right, so now, was that too much, Mr. T? I've continued to use Expression Engine on approximately 20 sites on my own, right? Now, Expression Engine is a paid product. So it's approximately, I think, 200 plus for a commercial license. When I do these sites, trust me, I can bill that back pretty easily. The $200 entry point for my clients is nothing compared to what they're paying me to do the design. So what's good for me is that I can do sites like this for my clients. And if they don't want to pay me a maintenance fee, the beautiful thing about Expression Engine is that there's a paid support staff on the forums. Does everybody get what that means? There are people who are paid to hang out in the forums and help you, right? So when my clients need help, these people come in and they help. And sometimes they pay me, sometimes they just use the forum. So this is a site I did for Pennebaker Hedges Films and Expression Engine. Again, pretty simple. This is the site I did to get free tattoos. It's totally working. Okay, now this site. I show this site because it looks very different from some of the other things I did. It's a little more standard, but it's all run on EE. Again, no custom PHP. All those menu items are dynamic. So if my client adds a section, it immediately goes to the right. There's no menu building tool. There's none of that sort of weirdness that comes with some of these systems. And the main reason I'm showing this, and this is actually the last set of things I'm showing, is that I coded on the EE side, I coded this whole site in one day. Okay? So in other words, I did all the Photoshop, all the HTML, all that stuff. That took a few days, or I guess a few weeks. But the actual EE implementation of this site took approximately 7 hours. So you can see how fast you can do these things, right? And again, it's very, very simple. So I'm done.
Tiffany.
Hi, I'm Tiffany Ferris. And what I'm going to do is a little bit different than what everyone else has done so far, because we bill ourselves as content management system agnostic. We'll use whatever tool is appropriate for the particular job. So what I wanted to do was take a slice of a particular client and show you how their CMS needs and their implementation has varied over the years. We've had the privilege of working with the Art Institute of Chicago since 2005. And what's interesting about them is there's a museum site and a school site. So when they needed to do a redesign in 2005, what they asked us to do was they said, well, we're still thinking what we want to do for our real content management system, but we need to launch the site about 6 months before we're going to make that decision. So round one was do a 1,500-page site with Dreamweaver and just build in some really targeted content management tools from scratch. We're a LAMP shop, so we did it all in the LAMP stack with MySQL and PHP, and we really focused in on those pieces of content management tools that would make the site sing a little bit more. So we built out the events module, which we can then cross-reference, just drop into different sections, and then online collections so that they could actually add more images. When we first worked with this site, it had about 100 images from their vast, vast collection of hundreds of thousands of works of art, and we were able to take it up to about 1,000 works of art. So that, again, was this kind of net positive improvement. We were able to then integrate that collections module with the events module. But again, this is all custom PHP that we were doing with MySQL. But it did give kind of browsing and searching capabilities on the site. While they were trying to make up their mind which content management system they were really going to go with. So we approached it with the mindset that this is an interim solution. And, it was very quick and easy. It was very fast to get done. I mean, our entire production side from taking the Photoshop files to launching the site was about 2 months, including testing and all the content proliferation. So, I mean, it went very fast. And the reason it could do that is it had a very discrete, simple scope. Right. So one of the disadvantages of building custom tools when you have this really targeted sweet spot scope that you know exactly what you're going to do and you do it really well, your interim tool doesn't remain interim. So to this day, that events module still lives. So it's built in PHP 4 and MySQL 4, and we would much rather have that be built in PHP 5 and MySQL 5. I'm hoping that maybe soon they might pull that into Drupal, but I'm getting a little ahead of myself. Other disadvantages, obviously, of this approach, they never added another page. We turned the site over to them, and they were just, the navigation was a nightmare to do in Dreamweaver, obviously, as I think everybody in this room probably knows. And it was just very difficult for them to extend. Fortunately, they really did pick a new content management system. And so up in round two came a product called Serena Collage. Has anyone actually heard of Collage? Use Collage? Okay. So it's a a design time product, which is a little bit different than the than Drupal or Expression Engine, which are runtime products. So we integrated the site. Didn't really make that many changes. A couple of key changes here and there. The navigation became text-based, which was great, so that it could be managed, again, by the CMS. And they did a little bit of tweaking to the design just because they had that opportunity. They still left it table-based at that point, just because the scope of the project didn't let them do it. Collage has a really nice master page structure, so it's pretty agnostic to whatever kind of master page template you kind of want to build out with it. So the other thing we were able to add pretty easily were breadcrumbs. So this is a little example of what the administrative interface is. It is a WCMS. It's on the enterprise side. And what you do is you set up these contribution layouts, and you can put a lot of really detailed instructions in it. You can have your contribution layouts look very similar to the actual site, but it isn't in fact a preview. You put in lots of instructional code to tell them exactly, walk them through the process. And I think Collage's greatest asset is the fact that it's very metadata driven. You can assign tons of types of metadata to any piece of content or pages in themselves that then you can use to kind of create your business logic behind the scenes. Some of the disadvantages that if you're used to using more runtime systems, the design time aspect can get a little frustrating. You do not have access to the database, so I can't just go in and do a database query. One of the things we found with the Art Institute site was that although there was this kind of theoretical capability of having it on deploy when it actually spit out essentially static files to the server, which is nice from a performance perspective but doesn't touch any of your runtime interactive content needs. They said, well, you know, you can actually have it execute some queries. So we were thinking, oh, well, what we'll do is we'll have it pull in all the browsing for each of the collections. And we'll just have, so that then those pages could be static. That never worked. So years and years, they're like, oh, yeah, it works. No, doesn't work. You know, but it did really allow us to create these asset types. So this is an image asset type that essentially ran the homepage, the random image on the homepage. What was really key all throughout these early stages of the site is to keep in mind that the Art Institute had no dedicated staff for their website. They updated it 4 times a year. They spent 1 week updating it each quarter, and they had a person and a half to do it. And so we really needed to find tools, both in the first stage and with Collage, that enabled the site to still keep looking fresh and dynamic all the time without having, you know, regular care and feeding. So again, just the breadcrumbs. So what's the roundup on Collage? Because they're still using it to this day. The master pages were great. Almost everybody who buys Collage says that they buy it for workflow, because theoretically you can have this whole task built into it and everything works well. Version control, absolutely. This was bar none, I think, the most used feature, because after we launched the site, the first thing they did is they used the smart import feature to import all those static pages we'd created. And then the site actually pretty much existed like that in Collage for about a year until we went back through and actually broke it out into real master pages and into separate contribution assets to really help manage and leverage some of Collage's capabilities. Breadcrumbs worked really well. The other thing we really like about it is links as assets. This is very, very helpful for any internal links on your site. It actually treats every single link as an asset that's managed specifically. So if you need to change a link, you change it in one place and it changes everywhere on the site. Where this is not as ideal is with external links. You don't really want to manage all of the external links on your site, particularly if you have a ton of them. You really don't want them to clutter up your asset. It deployed a static file. So again, that's a performance enhancement. And training contributors, it is very straightforward. It kind of feels very WYSIWYG. It feels like you're editing in place, actually on the pages. It has preview. It really worked very well there. On the flip side, training developers or training trainers for Collage was actually a much higher, much steeper learning curve. And we've worked with a lot of different clients who work with Collage, and a lot of them have had trouble keeping staff working with Collage. It's a bit mind-numbing. It's it's very tedious, so there's lots of turnover. And internally, what we do is we try not to have people work on back-to-back Collage projects. because it really does burn them out, which is, you know, a bit of a problem. It's expensive. It is excruciatingly slow. So any collage project we ever do, we double the amount of time it's going to take to do content proliferation because you're just waiting for the latency on the product. It is not Mac friendly. No matter what Serena said, they were always working on that Mac interface and they were just about ready to make it work. Never worked. Never ever worked. It did not have a very smart navigation. It was better than Dreamweaver, which isn't really saying that much. And it interfered with PHP code. That links as assets thing, why it's really helpful when you're actually creating a link, when you're doing a path in PHP that you want it to leave alone, it doesn't. It tries to manage that as an asset. So that's actually quite problematic. It doesn't provide any support for a dynamic framework. So anything you want to do in runtime, anything you want to do that's interactive, you're going to have to find another platform and really segment it to leave it over here. You know, oh, well, we're going to have online personal collections. Well, that's just going to live over here. And Collage is going to pretend it doesn't know about it. Apparently, this is an end-of-life product. I found out yesterday that Collage is no longer selling any more licenses. So we have some very, very shocked and unhappy clients that actually they're not making an announcement about it. So maybe this is the announcement that Collage just went end of life. So you heard it here first. They're going to sell licenses only to existing licensees until February 1st of next year, and they're only going to fix severity 1 and 2 issues. Big problem for another one of my clients who has about 100 sites are getting ready to roll out in the next 3 weeks. So that was not a fun call I made yesterday. All right, so round three, Drupal. So Palantir has drunk the Kool-Aid, and we are really into Drupal now. We had a very, very fun project last summer with the Indianapolis Museum of Art, and we did some really kind of innovative things with that site. And we thought when the Art Institute came back and said, we really do want to do a real-time integration with our digital asset management system so that we can expose not just thousands, not just tens of thousands, but eventually hundreds of thousands of works of art from our digital asset management system onto the website for people to use, we immediately said, okay, we think Drupal's going to be the best fit here. So that's exactly what we did. We took all of the collections, we gave it another tweak, built a SOAP interface for Drupal, and then made it so that anybody can go onto the site, you can browse around again, and we kind of have now that Drupal controlling the menuing on the site, so that now you've got different themes, subgenres, some collections, a lot more related content you can browse to really pull together various sources of information, not just the image and not just the brief description, but any PDF they have, any flash movies they might have about a particular work, all kind of gets consolidated into one. Thing to keep in mind is that their digital asset management system is not an off-the-shelf product. It's actually a 4D proprietary system that they've built up over the years. And you know, by being able to rely on how Drupal is exposed and able to work really well with third-party systems or remote data loading, we were able to kind of make that work. So again, all the navigation on the left-hand side, that's all going to be pulled from Drupal, and it knows to go and get all the browsing capabilities in there. And on the admin side, this is what it looks like in Drupal. You manage a department just from this very simple console, and then all of the actual artwork information never passes. It kind of passes through Drupal. Drupal understands it's there and lets it be and just passes right on through. So you don't end up with any any issues of duplicating your content or forking your content, because really, ultimately, the digital asset management system needs to be and remain the authoritative source on this kind of content. So again, you can kind of see some of the interactive features and that you can essentially create as many personal collections as you want on the fly. Again, kind of leveraging Drupal's jQuery integration. The other thing that came to us, and they said, you know, we have major exhibitions, each of which needs this kind of individual personalized site. So, but they really have not built up an in-house web staff. They don't have a lot of time to do this. So they needed a way with point and click just through the Drupal admin to be able to create customized major exhibition sites. So the first one up was actually for Winslow Homer, which opened on, I think, February 15th. So that's kind of where the push for the launch came from. So this is an example of one of those sites that we built for them. It allows them, again, to go into the digital asset management system, associate individual works of art that Drupal doesn't know anything about, but it allows Drupal to say, well, we think that these particular object IDs are related to this event. Go ahead and pass it through, and it generates this kind of actual interface there. And then you've got the color picker, so they can absolutely change the skin, which generates the CSS right through there. So that's that entire, those four screens are exactly how you create a brand new exhibition. So right now they've got three total exhibitions. So rounding it up, the pros of Drupal, as Jeff said, very powerful templating. We loved its remote data handling. It was a no-brainer when we were going to open it up to individual users to be able to create their own personal collections and comment on works. The user management in Drupal is just awesome. jQuery integration was great. It just proved to be this really solid, flexible framework because we were able to write our own modules when we needed them. Some of the things that we found difficult is we really wanted to build this in Drupal 6, and it just didn't come out on time. We kept working and working to try and get our patches in to make it work. It didn't work. So then we ended up using Drupal 5. Reverse proxy is not as great in Drupal 5 as it is in 6. And Drupal is also really difficult in handling those kind of one-off exceptions. It likes very consistent business logic. And so when you do have these kind of edge cases where you need it to do something different just in this one case, not so great. Anyway, there you go.
Alrighty, so I think we have just under 10 minutes for questions. So if you'd like to line up at the microphone, introduce yourself, and Oh, and Jeff will throw you a t-shirt. So, go ahead.
All right. Hi, Jeff. This is a question straight for you. I have a design company, and I drank Drupal Kool-Aid a year ago. And every time I bring somebody new onto a project, I have to point them to, okay, install Drupal. What do I do now? Where do I go? And so I have to say, okay, there's Views, there's CCK, and show them how to build a site from there. Is there a place that you can recommend to people who might be new to Drupal to kind of get that kind of direction?
On that slide, why Drupal sucks, actually one of the reason is if you want a little toy race car, you can get that. Drupal is like getting, say, a garbage truck full of Legos. You can build really awesome stuff with it, but you got to learn all the pieces. And that's actually one of the major failings of it. The community is actually starting to put a lot more resources out there of recipes, tutorials, video casts. The company that I work for, Lullabot, we actually do training workshops, just sort of trying to, you know, teach people to fish rather than going out and building their websites for them for that very reason. Honestly, that's actually one of the biggest failings. It takes time to dive in and come up to speed on all of the different pieces that you're using to build a complex website at this point. I'm sorry I don't have a better answer other than to say it really does rock when you put those things together. It just takes some experimentation and asking questions and using some of the resources that are out there.
Well, and I also have a suggestion. One of the things that we did, because we were kind of in a similar situation, we adopted Drupal like February of last year. We created an install profile. So we kind of said, okay, well, these dozen modules are things that we use over and over and over again. So by installing Drupal, you automatically get our install profile, which has roles we have set up that are kind of the default roles so that they're not starting from ground one. And then you can focus on taking it to the next level and saying, okay, you're a themer. Here's some resources for you. If you need to do the business logic, go over in this direction.
There's also a fantastic book by Matt Westgate, who's head of Lullabot, called Pro Drupal Development, and I highly recommend that for anyone starting out in Drupal. Pro Drupal Development. Next question.
Congratulations, sir. You get a t-shirt.
Okay. like Jeff, I also work for a Drupal consulting firm. But this might apply to the other consultants out there. And I was wondering, when a client comes to you and they have a certain feature that they want, and you know out of the box it's not included in your CMS or in a third-party module, do you find yourself trying to lean them towards an existing module, tweaking an existing module, or creating something from scratch?
It depends on what that special thing they want to do is. Usually – using tools that are already available in the community is great. And working with the people who are already building those things is one of the things that we try to do a lot. But sometimes it's better just to build something from scratch. And actually on the Chris Daughtry and all those Sony sites, there were actually like four or five specific reusable modules that ended up getting donated back to the community just based on that project because they wanted to do some stuff. So
I think it also really depends on the client because the client has to be able to support whatever it is that you're building. So there are times when I'll say, yes, you can get that. Yes, it's open source. But for you, it may not be the best choice because you can't support it. You don't have the technical expertise to support it.
I've been pleased with the amount of our clients that actually agree to allow us to build custom things for them and then also release it back into the open source community. So
I should say that at EE, that's never happened to me. Ever.
All right. Next question.
All right. This is for Jeff. Short. I was wondering if you could address the question of Drupal and workflow. Are there any modules and do they work?
It's called workflow. That's the name of the module. We've actually used that on a number of sites. There's a pair of modules called Actions and Workflow that basically let you set up any kind of states that content can be in, from draft, in editorial review, published and live, that control both who has access to change it, who has access to transition it from one state to another. And even can go in and when you create a new revision of a piece of content, like going in and changing the verbiage on your, you know, terms of service page or putting a correction on an article that got published or something like that, that can even roll it back to previous states and stuff like that. It's just another one of those two pieces that you click together and then throw in and start configuring.
EE has that built in.
Oh, burn. All right, next question, and hopefully it's something else that.
If I throw someone the wrong size, just come up to me later.
Hi, my name is Josh. I'm the developer of a CMS called Big Medium, and sort of one of the focuses for me and my project, and I think you see a similar thing in Expression Engine, is trying to reduce the pain of content management setup and configuration for folks who are not developers, and in particular thinking about designers who have a wealth of know-how for HTML and CSS, but not necessarily programmers or not even having a knowledge or interest in content modeling, database administration, and so on. So I'm starting to see a trend, I think, in products like Expression Engine and hopefully in mine, of trying to abstract away the developer role. And I'm wondering the degree to which you're seeing that happening in the various projects that you champion and the trade-offs in power or flexibility, if any, in making that ease of use possible.
I think that's for you, Mike.
No, I don't, because my end user isn't a developer. It's always just somebody who doesn't even know HTML. I pretty much remove that whole layer from the EE side. So,
well, and it's been removed for you.
No, it's been the install part on Expression Engine is like click, 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 installed. It's really, you just upload the files and you run one file. So it really does go fast. It's the getting the site from the template that it comes with to the real thing that's where all the heavy lifting is. And on my side, it's always been a matter of just cutting and pasting snippets from the documentation and changing things like a number and a name. I mean, it's pretty...
Well, and I guess my question is sort of, what do you see as the role for developers going forward for sort of, at least for a certain class of common... sites.
I mean, like Dries, the guy who founded the Drupal project, one of his scare everybody slides that he does at Drupal presentations is the webmaster has already been eliminated. You know, we have tools that do that, mm-hmm. you know, manage a billion files. And he says, what we want to do now is eliminate the developer, make it so that you're using tools to build that stuff, which is a great thing to say to a room of 800 developers. But but it's always going to be a trade-off. I mean, if you're writing 500K of code in order to give somebody a clickable UI that they could just write 20 lines of code that they picked up in a forum post, it doesn't make sense. It's always a trade-off, and it depends on the kinds of tasks you're trying to accomplish.
If you look at something like Chirp, which is like Tumblr on your own server, I don't know if you guys have seen that. It's like so deadly simple to install. I mean, I would imagine that a lot of these are going to go that way. They don't have as many features, and I think for that kind of install base, it's just fine.
Thanks.
Okay, I think we may have time for one more question. Yep. So this is the last one.
Hi. I was wondering if you guys could just quickly touch on the cost structure for each of the products that you ran through, and specifically, I mean, per website, do you have a startup cost, a monthly cost, per module? If your products are free, how do you generate revenue?
Matt, you want to tackle that one first?
I'll start because it's probably the most complicated of the bunch. So it is a Microsoft product, so I will start with it all depends. If it is on your intranet, it is based on the number of client access licenses, so the number of people in your company that are accessing it. If it's on the internet, it's a flat fee for the external connector, which street price is in the neighborhood of $25,000. There is a large community of us that is working towards a single server type license for smaller organizations that don't happen to be educational, that because educational institutions get an enormous discount on SharePoint. But and of course, your mileage may vary depending on how many other Windows licenses you have, because again, it is Microsoft.
Everything in Drupal is free. The downside of that is you need knowledge to build stuff with those free tools. So a lot of it basically boils down to either hiring a company who can, you know, help you ramp up, or spending the time that it takes to ramp up. At this point, most of our clients that Lullabot works with, we're doing things like getting them through that ramp up phase and then training their internal teams so that they can maintain and manage a large site on an ongoing basis. But at the same time, if you're an individual who's trying to come up to speed on like building sites with it, or you're evaluating it, everything that you can build with Drupal, you can just pull down off Drupal.org and start messing with it and put together your site and see what you think.
Unfortunately, I didn't do the license research, but I think a personal license for, say, a blog is about $100. I could be wrong. And a developer, like a commercial license, is around $200, $250. And that, when you get the product, you get that, and you could use it in theory forever as long as it keeps running on the servers. You're basically paying like a subscription fee to the code. So if they do a big dot update, you might have to buy in again, which I've had to buy in a few times, and with my clients, it's been no problem. But what comes with that, again, is paid support staff. So it's a pretty good trade-off, I think.
So both with our kind of custom CMS tools that we would write, and with Drupal, we are on the services model. So whatever it takes us to kind of build it and integrate it for you, I mean, that's essentially it. The software is free. Once we build it, you have a license to do whatever you kind of want with it. So it really is just about being spot on with your time and materials estimate up front when you're working on a project like that. We picked up Collage because we do a lot of higher ed work, and it was a very successful project in higher ed until yesterday. And
how much is a Collage license?
A Collage license, there's this kind of like there's the crack part of it. They're like, oh, well, you can have a single install, and it's like $12,000. Really, most of the implementations that these schools bought, thank God I didn't recommend it to them and had no part in their purchasing. It was, you know, $80,000 to $100,000 or $200,000 just to buy Collage. And before they started to integrate any sites into it, which is why I'm a little bit devastated about that whole end of life thing for them.
The Microsoft guy just said that makes me look good.
Because we're still here.
And I think that's a great place to end it. Thank you all so much for coming.
And I don't want to carry this bag, so if anybody wants a t-shirt.
Jeff has more t-shirts.